Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going
to
find one.
Are you confused with the ups and downs of the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stocks.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Hello, everybody. Welcome again to another episode of Wall Street Unspun. We do this show live every Wednesday evening, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific, on my website at www.europac.net, and also on shortwave radio 5.07 megahertz, live every Wednesday. We are taking calls. I encourage the calls to come in, keep the discussion going. I like to have calls from existing clients and potential clients. The number is 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. Anyway, a few announcements. You know, the Vegas Money Show is coming up next week. I'll be leaving for Las Vegas on this Saturday, and I think the show is Monday or Tuesday through Thursday. And we also just sent out the email on our client-only meeting, and it's not necessarily client-only. It's anybody who's on my email list who registers can attend. It's just that the client-only conferences are not advertised in any money show literature, and we do not advertise it from our booth. So if you don't know about it in advance, you won't be able to go. And the money show doesn't publicize, you know, where it takes place, because, you know, they don't charge us for it, so they don't want us to publicize it to the attendees. But so far, for the last several money shows, I've had one of these client conferences at each one. I will be on CNBC tomorrow, if anybody wants to watch it live, at 11 a.m. I think that's a morning call. So I'll be there. I'll probably only last for 3 or 4 minutes, so if you're not there right at 11, you'll miss it, although I probably won't start until a few minutes after the hour. You never know. But so 11 o'clock tomorrow on CNBC. Well, you know, today we got another announcement from the Fed that they will not hike interest rates. That's a big surprise. But again, you know, they continue to pretend that the economy is, you know, not in trouble when it is. They continue to try to also pretend that they're worried about inflation, even though they think it's going to moderate. They're worried that they might be wrong, and therefore they might have to hike if they're wrong. And you know, they're trying to pretend that, you know, they're ready to hike rates if they have to, but also say that, you know, if they don't have to, they'll be able to cut rates, especially if the economy weakens, but they don't necessarily expect it to weaken. I mean, the whole idea is they're just walking this fine line. They're trying to be all things to all people. They're trying to keep the stock market happy, the bond market happy, the dollar happy. You know, they're trying to keep everybody happy and keep this this confidence game going. Problem is they really can't do this forever, and I still think it's close to the end of the game. I mean, the dollar has bounced off a little bit from its lows. We never quite got down to the 80 level yet. I don't think we even broke below 81. Well, I think we got into the low 81s, maybe 81.10, 81.20. I think right now we're more like 81.80-ish. But I think, you know, we're spending a lot of time near these levels, and I think we're getting ready to pierce them to the downside. There are quite a few people out there talking about, you know, a counter trend bounce. There's too much dollar negativity, and, you know, maybe we'll get a down bounce, and who knows, they could be right. I'm still thinking that the greater risk is that the dollar doesn't bounce, it falls to the floor. And even if it does bounce a little bit here, you know, it's going to be a dead cat variety, and eventually it is going to crash below these support levels. I really see no way that the dollar can't I can't do that. And I think when it does, it's going to really change the dynamics of what's going on, and people are going to start to be more appreciative of the problem the U.S. economy is in, the problem the Fed's in, how bad inflation really is, and how far behind the curve the Fed is on dealing with it. And then that's when we can see some real problems. But meantime, the markets continue to chug along. The Dow made another new nominal high today. But of course, many of the markets are making new highs. Most of the markets that we're investing in for clients are also making new highs, and they're making them far faster. You know, the Chinese market, I think, is now up something like 100% again on the year, year to date, or some crazy number like that. Just hit a new high. But all the major markets around the world, huge acquisitions, all kinds of M&A deals going on, particularly in the natural resource type companies. Look what's going on in Australia. You know, these stocks are just going through the roof, these resource stocks. You know, the gold stocks, the mining stocks, are still lagging, and I still think that represents a lot of complacency. People still don't appreciate the extent to which this market is being driven by inflation. You know, I like the euphemisms that the market uses for inflation, like liquidity. People keep saying, oh, there's no inflation, it's just a lot of liquidity. You know, which, without realizing that liquidity is just a euphemism for inflation. That's all it is. I mean, they're trying to say, what do they think inflation is? It's liquidity. It's, you know, that's what the governments create, but they think by calling it liquidity that somehow that's a good thing. But that's what's driving all this. And, at some point, we're going to see an explosive move up, I think, in gold and silver and mining shares in general, precious metals. The industrial mining companies, you know, the base metal companies, those stocks are doing far, far better. And just the general resource companies are doing much better than the precious metals. And I think the precious metals have got to catch up. I think there's going to be a big move in these things. So, you know, for physical precious metals, we've been recommending that people buy through the Perth Mint, which I think is a very secure way to buy precious metals, secure in the sense that the metals themselves are safe from theft or confiscation, not secure in the sense that the metal can't lose value. Certainly if we're wrong on gold, there's nothing that says the price of gold can't fall. But I'm talking about security in the sense that, your gold is there. And they will store it for you for free. Same thing with silver and platinum. And I've got information on my website on the Perth Mint, also at www.goldyoucanfold. And, to get in or get information, you can call my California office, 800-993-8350. 800-993-8350. Danny Dwyer is the person to ask for, and she can help you with any questions on the Perth Mint and help you get your account set up before we see the next leg up in metal prices. And I think that leg could be huge. I know we've got some callers now waiting on hold, so let me quickly jump to the phones. The first call is from Walter in Riverside, California. Hey, Walt.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay.
Yeah, I really admire your columns and seeing you on television. You really tell it straight. So, can I ask a question?
Sure.
I'm really concerned about the Canadian oil trusts. They look really good, and I'm wondering what the downside is. They look too good to be true.
Well, I don't think there's much downside, to be honest with you, at this point. I mean, we had a huge hit in those stocks, when the government proposed increasing taxes on them, in about 4 years from now, 3.5, 4 years from now, and they got clobbered, and I think they got clobbered far more than they should have. I think a lot of the risks are out of the stocks. I think a lot of the, I think they're already more than priced in, and I think, there is the chance that the Canadian government can come to their senses and do about face and actually stop these higher taxes from ever kicking in. So I think these are great buys. I mean, I own quite a few of them myself, and I took an opportunity when we had this big decline to add to my positions. And, sometimes, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. And I think when it comes to some of these trusts, that's what they are.
How come people aren't piling into them? Do they have some sort of...
Well, they don't know. I mean, or they look at the chart and they see they've gone down and they want to chase something that's gone up. And plus, there's a lot of people that think oil prices are going to fall. And, therefore they think, the market's going to fall. But even if they fall, it's these trusts are still good buys. Now, natural gas prices, a lot of these trusts have exposure to natural gas. Natural gas prices really got clobbered, and so that's really depressed them. But I think there were some special circumstances around that Aramith hedge fund and around the unseasonably warm winter that we had, and the fact that a lot of speculative longs came in with a lot of natural gas, and there was just a lot of unwinding. I think that's not going to be there this next winter, and I'm looking for natural gas prices to shoot up. So, we're continuing to buy these trusts for clients who are new clients of ours. Generally, we look around 20%, 25% of our portfolio in many cases in these Canadian trusts. And that was our, exposure before the drop, and we're still recommending it. And for people who had positions before the drop, I mean, we've recommended averaging down. And, one of our stocks, in fact, I think the biggest position we have in any single Canadian trust has risen so much in the last couple months. In fact, it goes up every day. It's almost recovered everything it lost. It's almost at a new high from before.
Can we not mention particular stocks?
Well, you talk. Call up any of our brokers, and we'll tell you about it. I mean,
because the HT is doing that, and I have that.
But one of our largest positions, is way off its highs. I mean, more than 50% below where it was, a year and a half ago. So, there's still, and that one is more natural gas. The one that's making new highs is mostly oil. But look, there's a lot of stocks that we like. Just talk. Do you have an account with us yet?
No.
Yeah, just talk to the brokers. And they can tell you which of the trusts we're buying and get you going.
So I have several questions, but if you have other callers, I don't want to, hog the line. So it's up to you.
Well, I got a couple more. I mean, if you want to be brief.
Okay. If I can, with HSBC, I can get a pound or euro account. Are there any tax consequences to that?
Well, the only difference in taxes when you're dealing in foreign stocks is the accounting for the foreign withholding, and then the fact that you have to claim a tax credit. So you might have a slightly higher bill from your accountant to calculate your taxes and to accurately claim your credit, but that's it, and it's worth it because the dividends are so much higher abroad and the returns should be so much better that it's worth paying an extra $100 or whatever it is to your accountant to capture all your tax credits. But anyway, and these, all the brokers at Euro Pacific can certainly talk to you about this and help walk you through it. But anyway, I thank you for the call. Have you read my book yet?
Yeah, I bought it when you told me to via email.
All right, great.
All right, bye.
And more, I noticed, too, that the book has dropped back down again on Amazon. It's down around 1500. So if anybody hasn't bought Crash Proof, get on my website and buy it. I want to keep that book up there in a higher ranking. And if you have bought a copy, go buy another copy for your friends. Still I'm waiting for the first review on that book. I mean, no book reviewers have reviewed it. And I know the publisher sent out, many, many review copies to, newspapers that, every week publish, a section where they review books. And, it's amazing that nobody has even reviewed it, even to give it a bad review. I mean, it seems like it's a controversial, timely topic. I mean, I'm raising some serious concerns about the U.S. economy. You'd think somebody would want to review it, but no one has said anything about it. These book reviewers review books all the time that many of them don't even sell as well as my book, and they're on crazy, boring topics that very few people would be interested in, yet they get reviewed. I wonder if anybody listening to the show might want to make a point of calling up a newspaper in your town that has a book review section and maybe ask them, hey, why don't you review Crash Proof by Peter Schiff? I mean, it seems like it's a good book. I mean, I want to try to get some publicity. Again, that's where I've been trying to encourage people to call up these radio talk shows and introduce this topic, because it seems like the mainstream, establishment doesn't really feel like addressing it. But maybe we can force our way in there. A lot of these, these talk show hosts, they're not scripted, or you call up, they have a screener, but you don't mention, you're going to mention my book, but you call up, you want to talk about something in the economy or in the market, and then you quickly work in there, hey, by the way, have you read Peter Schiff's new book, Crash Proof? What do you think about his thesis or his hypothesis? Most hosts are going to say, no, what's the book about? Well, what is he saying? And then you get a discussion about the book, and hundreds of thousands or millions of people could be listening. But I want to try to get this book to make some kind of an impact. Anyway, let's take another caller, Eddie calling from San Diego. Go ahead, Eddie.
Hello?
Yes.
Peter?
Yes, this is Peter. Go ahead.
Well, this is Eddie from San Diego, and I'd like to first thank you for the book that you published a few months ago, The Crash Proof.
Thanks for reading it.
Well, you've been talking because I myself immigrated from South Korea, And in 1997, I was able to monitor the whole currency crisis that led to huge collapsing of the housing market and stock market in 1998. So ever since then, I've been watching the U.S. economy because I've been following the current the deficit number, which has been growing dramatically. And even last year, I wondered, like, why does the U.S. economy not collapse? I wonder myself. So I used to tell
Don't worry, it will. It's just a matter of time.
I used to tell my friends, hey, you got to get out of the U.S. market. And people started calling me, are you another Dr. Doom? So I did I typed your name on google.com and I found your book and your name. And this week I'm opening an account with your company, Euro Pacific Capital. First I want to thank you that your book that was so impressive, so insightful, I was amazed.
Great.
How much you knew about economics and how much you understand the current economic crisis.
Have you already contacted my office to open up an account?
Yeah, I'm in the process. And I've been telling my friends that they have to join your company as well, but I wonder, because I downloaded all of your TV shows on your company website,
uh-huh.
And all these people disagree with your agenda. I just don't understand why your simplistic, like plain perspective cannot be convincing to other people.
Well, you remember, the people that are coming on these shows, I mean, they have their own agendas and their own, you know, beliefs, and they're not going to change their beliefs based on a 2-minute, television debate. So, I don't expect them to come on and agree with me. But certainly the facts speak for themselves, and, the one thing that, a lot of my opponents have a problem with is they're used to talking to bears who are short, and they can say, well, look, you're wrong, you're losing money, you're going broke, you're missing out. See, I'm not short anything. I'm bearish, but I just invest abroad, and as a result, I'm making more money than the bulls in this bull market. So they have a hard time dealing with that concept. They still can't get around the fact that I'm not going broke being a bear, that I'm making as much money or if not more money than they are. And the main difference is I'm going to keep my money. My clients are going to keep their money. They're going to lose theirs. They just don't know it yet.
I see. I have two questions that they need your expertise. The one question is your book didn't mention anything about Russia, because Russia has a huge account surplus, and I believe their currency is underpriced, and I wonder why you didn't say anything.
I didn't
Russia.
Talk a lot about Russia. We're not doing a lot of investing there, but yeah, they're another emerging economy. I mean, there's a lot of things that aren't in the book. I mean, I rushed. I had to get the book out to a deadline. I initially started working on it, and things got screwed up. So there are a number of things I would have liked to have put in there. The editors cut out an entire chapter before I had a chance to write it. Which was going to be more on, foreign markets in general, like on, and it would have mentioned Russia, but it would have been more specifically on China and Asia. But they cut that chapter out because we ran out of time. And there are some other things I didn't put in there. And in fact, when I reread the book, I realized, God, I meant to put this in, I meant to put that in. But, the publishers just had to get it out at a certain time, and I was just, stretched to get the material there. So there's definitely stuff I would have liked to have put in the book, but the main thing is the book is out there. It does its job. It's that, for people to read it who don't really understand, there's enough in there that I think I make my case. Anything else would have just been really overkill. I think there's enough in there that people can understand the problems and figure out that they got to do something about it.
I see. I have a second question. I talked to my Japanese investors about this problem. They think, here's their thinking. Their thinking is because the U.S. dollar has been weakening, but the yen has been weakening as well. So
the yen has been weakening as well, and that's the Japanese government is deliberately doing that, and I think they're making a fatal mistake or a grave mistake, maybe not fatal, but I think eventually the yen's going to turn around and make a huge move up. I mean, if I'm wrong, that's going to mean massive inflation in Japan, too. The Japanese are going to, maybe they need their own Dr. Doom over there to write a book about helping the Japanese get their money outside of Japan, although a lot of people, Japanese are already doing that. I mean, a lot of the money buying stocks around the world is coming from Japan.
But they argue that as long as Japanese yen is as weak as dollar, America will continue to borrow money from Japan. We can continue to postpone the bursting of bubble.
Yeah, but I think something's going to happen soon. Anyway, I really appreciate your call. I got a couple more people on hold.
Okay, thank you very much.
On board as a new client.
Thanks.
Steady. All right, let me skip over. I got somebody calling in from Denmark, so let me quickly take that call so his bill doesn't add up too much, or the Faroe Islands. Life?
Yeah, hello.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm good. What's on your mind tonight, or whatever? I don't know. What is it? Is it evening there? Morning?
It's, let me just see. It's 1:30 in the morning.
You're up late.
Yeah. Yeah, I stay up late to listen to your show every week.
Great.
Anyways, Peter, I had two questions I wanted to ask you. First question is, it's about silver. You remember in February 28th when there was this sell-off or whatever you want to call it, a consolidation, or where like most indexes around the world dropped around 15%. And it also took silver and gold down with it as well. And the thing I noticed is that most of these indexes all around the world, they've passed that point of, I mean, they've gone higher than where they dropped off from.
Right, and gold silver really did not.
Well, gold actually did make, like, it did make it up close by, but silver is, like, silver was at 1470. When it did this drop on February 28th.
I know, and the mining stocks themselves have done even worse. Yeah, you know,
what's going on with it?
You know,
I mean,
but I think what happened, my guess again is, you know, every time we have a big drop in the U.S. stock market or global stock market, gold and gold stocks go down with it, and I think that discourages people because they think, look, why am I buying gold or gold stocks as an insurance? Because the minute the markets go down, those stocks go down even more. And I think every time we have an event like that, maybe it takes a little shine off of their lust or off of their appeal. But I think this is really setting people up, you know, to be in the wrong position in these stocks. So ultimately, I do look for major declines in some of these markets, particularly the U.S., but I think gold is going to take off, and I think a lot of people are going to be caught without their positions because they were expecting, you know, gold stocks and gold to fall with the market, and I don't think that's going to happen. But we have all these false alarms where you get drops where we don't have the big collapse. We're getting these little corrections, but I think when we do finally have the real collapse, that the gold and gold stocks will actually go higher, and I think they'll go a lot higher.
I kind of think that gold and silver won't really take off until the dollar index actually goes below 80, because there's a lot of misbelief that they think that it's actually going to bounce off of 80.
Yeah, well, we'll see. A lot of people think it might bounce, and they think that would be bearish for precious metals. But we'll see. I mean, maybe the precious metals will move first. Who knows?
My second question, Peter. I don't want to take too much time, but I thought it would be kind of cool to ask you. If you got to meet Ben Bernanke, let's say, and you got to ask him three questions, any questions you wanted, what would those be?
Oh, gee, I don't know. I mean, if we're in private, I mean, I wonder if he's going to answer me honestly or not. I mean, I guess he might just give me the same, you know, the same, you know, bull that he says everybody else. You know, but I would probably ask, you know, I might ask him, you know, hey, you know, to try to see, do you really appreciate the fix that you're in? I mean, did you have any conversations with Greenspan? And, you know, I mean, do you, to see if he appreciates, you know, the phony nature of our economy and the inflation that he's creating and the huge bust that lies ahead. I mean, I try to find out the extent to which he understands this. And I might try to ask him a little bit more about his, you know, helicopter comments and his belief that, you know, we should print as much money as possible to prevent asset prices from falling. I'd like to know if he really thought that through and if that was his real intention or not.
Yeah.
But who knows? I doubt I'll ever have the opportunity to speak with him.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for the call. I'm glad that you're staying up so late to hear this program. You got anybody else with you, or just by yourself?
Yeah, there's other guys around the Faroes, too, listening right now, too.
All right, well, great. Well, say hi to everybody over there, and make sure they all get a copy of my book.
Yeah, I just got mine the other day in the mail. I ordered it on Amazon.
All right. Well, hey, thanks a lot. Enjoy the read.
Thank you, Peter.
Bye-bye. I'd like to get these international calls, know that people are listening. Anyway, let's take a quick break for commercial. We will be back for more phone calls in the next segment.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
We are back, and the number to call live with questions is 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. Let's go to Marshall, who has been waiting patiently in Minnesota. Go ahead, Marshall.
I was wondering, I just was following a infrastructure oil stock, which gained 20% today. And it seems to me rather strange that any stock would all of a sudden gain 20%. The excuse was that its first quarter earnings were better than expected. I don't know why any investor would think that because the history last quarter was better than expected.
What kind of company are you talking about? Is this a large major company or, you know, a small penny stock?
Foster Wheeler, FWLT is the ticker symbol. It's a energy infrastructure stock, you know, like a driller type oil service provider, which, you know, Cramer had recommended. Today it went up 20%.
Well, did Cramer just recommend it yesterday too, or?
No, he's been kind of talking about it
sometimes earnings come out, and, you know, with this kind of market, with people chasing stories and chasing momentum and all the leverage players in there, I mean, yeah, that can happen. I mean, you know, stocks come out with bad earnings or they guide down. Well, Cisco was down, you know, 6-7% today. You know, it's a big stock. I mean, so yeah, I mean, it happens.
But what I'm wondering is, isn't there basically sort of an insider thing going on where you have these hedge funds and these insiders basically are just simply pumping up stocks and running other ones down?
I think there's a major problem brewing in hedge funds. I touched on it a little bit in my book, but not much. But, you know, these guys are taking a tremendous amount of leverage. They're getting their 20% of the profits. They lever up. They buy the same stocks. They push each other's stocks up. And then on paper, they have these huge gains, and then they write themselves these enormous checks because they get 20% of those paper gains.
But, and concomitantly, I would ask you, like, when the oil stocks went from 78 down to 50, wasn't that just basically a manipulation? Because I don't see fundamentally where
they're being manipulated, but I do think that when you have, you know, a lot of leverage players in there, you get some volatility and people change their minds and people will, you know, make trade quickly. I don't think anybody is manipulating the market. I don't think there's somebody with a, you know, there's a couple of guys behind a curtain pulling the levers and making stocks go up and down.
Not a couple of guys, but the hedge funds, from what I understand, is
manipulating.
All basically acting in concert, and they're just buying and selling all together and all making money when they go up and making money when they go down, which puts the retail investor...
Marshall, if you hear what I'm saying, I don't think, yes, in many cases, their strategies complement each other, and they inadvertently, you know, help each other by buying... Well, this is the opposite of what happened last week. Last week, I heard that noise, and I thought that I was off the phone, and it was the caller that dropped. And this time, I was the one that dropped off. Is the caller still on? But anyway, I was answering the question. I don't think there's a conspiracy or people are manipulating, but, yeah, it works out that way, that people help each other out by everybody buying the same stocks, and, you know, they're pushing them all up. But there's going to be a huge day of reckoning on these hedge funds. You know, not for the hedge fund managers, because they're already making their money. It's going to be for their clients, the people whose money they're managing and who are really bearing all these risks without knowing about it. People are going to lose a fortune in general who invested in hedge funds. I mean, there's going to be some exceptions, but in general, people are really going to lose a lot of money despite having paid their managers enormous fees. And in many cases, this inflationary environment that we're living in right now really works to the benefit of the hedge fund manager, because they get 20% of the profits regardless of whether those profits simply result from inflation. So, and they don't have to beat a benchmark. They just get 20% of any gain. So if you get 10% inflation one year and that causes stocks to go up 10%, you know, if you manage $1 billion, that 10%, you know, if you manage 10 billion rather, that 10% is 1 billion, your 20% is 200 million. So some guy, you know, writes himself a $200 million paycheck simply because there was high inflation that year. He didn't do anything. So, you know, this inflationary environment we're in is manna for the hedge fund managers. And, you know, of course, I kicked myself in the butt for, you know, I thought about this years and years ago, how lucrative these hedge funds were going to be because of all the inflation. But I just never got around to setting one up, which certainly works well for my clients, because a lot of money, if I would have been operating Euro Pacific Capital as a hedge fund using the same clients, I'd be a lot richer today, no question about it. I'd be a tremendous, you know, but my clients would be a lot poorer, because all my extra money would come at the expense of my clients, because I haven't been charging them 20% of the profits every year. I haven't been charging them a 2% management fee. So, but I knew that that strategy would be very lucrative. Eventually, it's going to fall apart, because I think people are going to realize that they're being suckered here. In most cases, they're just overpaying, and enormously so, for, in many cases, mediocre performance, and performance that is the result of luck, or not luck so much as incredible leverage and risk taking, and not, you know, real incisive investing or you know, good trading on the part of the managers. Now, there are some exceptions, but I mean those are the exceptions, not the rule. Anyway, let's go back to the phones. I have got Harold on the line from Colorado. Go ahead, Harold.
Hi, Pete. Nice show. Pete, a comment that I picked up from John Malden's Frontline Thoughts. Plexus Asset Management in South Africa ranks 52 stock market indices around the world in terms of how they have done the last 3 months, 6 months, 1, 2, and 3 years in euros. The Dow is number 50 over the last 3 years, only 3.88% per year, and is in negative territory for the last 3 months. So number 50 out of 52, and of course this just supports your thesis on that the Dow in nominal dollars is really just a joke. So thought you'd like to know that.
All right, good statistics. And you know, that's going to worsen. You know, we had the election over the weekend in France, and the conservative won, but that's very bullish for Europe. It's very bullish for the euro, and obviously bearish for the dollar.
Exactly. And you might use this. I know you're quick on your feet with your bull and bear debate out in Las Vegas, but you might use some of this kind of statistics to throw back at your friends Joey and...
I can't wait to rub Louis Navalier's nose in his own promotion, where he's encouraging people to invest abroad because the returns are so much better, when he's been criticizing me and questioning my patriotism for suggesting the same thing for the past couple of years.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'll look forward to seeing you in Vegas, Peter. And
hey, I'll see you there.
We have your book, and my wife just opened an account. We have another account with you, but we're very satisfied, and you're doing a great job, and thanks.
Yeah, thanks for the confidence and the plug.
Okay, take care, huh?
Thank you. We've got Steven on hold from Atlanta. Go ahead, Steve.
Hey, Peter. I called you a couple weeks ago, and I have a question about tax codes. I know you guys don't regard yourself as experts, but knowing a lot about foreign tax laws would be very important. How do you guys consider that?
Well, again, you know, the only tax consequences that differ, you know, when you have foreign investments have to do with the withholding that comes at the source from foreign governments, which results in foreign taxes being paid, which brings up the ability to claim credits for those taxes on your U.S. tax return. But other than that, I mean, there's no difference for capital gains and, you know, treatment, and everything is the same. There is a little bit of a difference. Like, I found out myself the hard way, I didn't even know this, but if you have margin interest and you borrow money and buy foreign stocks as opposed to domestic stocks, you cannot elect to offset your margin interest against qualified dividends. I didn't know that. I have a lot of margin debt in my account. I ended up with about $100,000 worth of margin debt, interest on margin debt that I couldn't write off, that I'm now carrying forward, because I had plenty of income, but I wasn't able to offset it because the income came from foreign sources and not domestic sources. I didn't even know that myself until this year. But sometimes there's a few other, you know, wrinkles in there for investing abroad, but, you know, you got to deal with that, you know, with your accounts.
Okay. Now, I live in Atlanta, but I'm going to ask you anyway, any recommendations on which CPAs or which type?
Oh, no. I mean, it's not that complicated, so any CPA that knows anything should be able to help you with your foreign tax credit. I mean, I used to do my own taxes, you know, believe it or not, until not too many years ago, and I was claiming I was doing it myself just on a Quicken, you know, one of those, TurboTax things, and had no problem doing and claiming my foreign tax credit. It's not complicated.
Okay. Next question. You know, a lot of mutual funds, or just funds in general, they do have track records. Do you display anything like that for clients?
No, we don't have a track record. I mean, we just started a managed account program for precious metals just recently. In fact, we haven't really taken much money except our own proprietary account. But technically speaking, since I've acted as a stock broker all of these years, I cannot claim a track record because I haven't managed anybody's money. I mean, I've helped. I mean, for all intent and purpose, I have managed the money because my clients have taken my advice. And so, you know, the returns that they have reflect my investment strategy and my outlook and my guidance, but I can't, you know, tout that, you know, in an advertisement or publish it as a track record. But I have a good track record with my clients themselves. They know how well their accounts have done. And again, a lot of the success that my clients have achieved is not because, you know, I'm such a great stock picker or because I've traded the accounts so well. I mean, we've done very little trading. It's mainly been just a macroeconomic call to get out of the U.S., to get out of the dollar, and to buy quality companies that pay good dividends. And that's basically what we've done. And that's what's responsible for the good returns, not my genius as a stock market picker. But it does speak to my credibility and the fact that I allow my clients to make money. We don't overtrade the accounts. You know, I treat all the clients as if, you know, they were relatives of mine. I mean, I try my best to maximize everybody's return and put people into good investments and protect the accounts and make sure that, you know, the only interests that are being served are my clients' interests. And, you know, not that we don't make money doing it. I mean, I make a good living. But I think that a lot of that is because of the years and years that I didn't take any shortcuts. So for many, many years, back in the mid-1990s to late 1990s, my income was very low compared to a lot of my friends who were making a quick buck in the tech stocks and the dot-com. So, you know, I paid my dues. But, you know, there's been a lot of rewards from my approach, and now, you know, my income is a lot higher than my comrades and most of my fellow stockbrokers who I knew who were stockbrokers in the late 1990s, and many of them have left the industry now. I mean, they don't even have any clients anymore. They made a lot of money off those clients in the late 90s, but then they lost the clients when their clients lost their money. And, you know, 99% of the clients I had in the mid-1990s are still with me.
Okay. How often do you expect into the future that you'll come across compelling info that would cause your brokers to recommend selling stocks and other investments?
Well, it's not my brokers that would recommend it. It's me that would recommend it. And, I don't know. I mean, you know, we've been selling one particular stock recently that was the subject of a cash takeover. And, yeah, I mean, And now one of my real estate trusts, which, you know, I was recommending for people, you know, has tripled. And I was, some people I look at it because it was one of the stocks I first recommended. And sometimes I'll call up a client, they don't have any more money to send, and that stock might be a third of their account or half of their account. And I've developed a lot of good new ideas over the last couple of years. So sometimes we might lighten up on a stock, even though I still like the stock, but because it represents such a high percentage of the client's account. And if he doesn't have any other resources to take advantage of other ideas that diversify the account, then we might pare back a position. But it seems very rare that I actually think a stock needs to be sold. I mean, and you know, so most of the stocks that we've bought, we hold, and that's the general idea. That's my goal when I buy a stock, is I hope we never have to sell it. I hope it just pays good dividends, the earnings grow, the dividends grow, and, you know, whether the stock appreciates over time, I mean, I imagine it will if the dividends grow, and, you know, but the key is not to lose money, not to invest in a business that's going to blow up. Just buy a good company that's got a good history in a basic business that you understand. You know, I don't invest in companies if I don't understand what they're doing or understand. There's so many people I talk to, even clients that buy stocks from brokers, I mean, they don't even know what they do. And, you know, I don't even know if the brokers know, you know. All they care is that it's going up.
Sure.
But anyway, hey, thank you for the call. We're running up against another time for a commercial. But have you read my book yet?
Yeah, I read it about a month ago.
Oh, great.
I wish I was as smarter than you so that I could truly critique it. You know, I pretty much just agree with what you're saying because I can't think of too much that contradicts it.
Yeah. All right, well, hey, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
All right, the number to call again is 888-678-9597. The lines are clear, so let's take a break, and we'll be back for the last segment.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Hey, okay, we're back. I thought they were going to play the clip twice. Anyway, you know, I'd like to talk a little bit politics, and you know, you hear a lot about the bias in the media and the media bias, but I definitely think that there was a lot of bias evident in the coverage of the Republican debates. I don't know if anybody saw these debates. If you did, if you want to call up and mention whether or not you agree with my point, it's 888-678-9597. But, you know, and I don't know why they call them debates. I mean, no one's really debating with each other. It's just a joint press conference with 10 individuals where they give them softball questions. But the interesting thing about the debate was in the polls that MSNBC did immediately following the debate, and any various polls, the overwhelming winner in the polls was Congressman Ron Paul from Texas, the Libertarian Republican, who's basically represents me in Congress. I mean, I have to look at him as my representative. He's the only one in Congress that says and votes what I feel, and that's the case with a lot of people. And of course, you know, the media never really mentioned, I mean, he's not one of the anointed, you know, favored candidates. But here's a guy that no one talks about that gets 40%, 50%. Some polls, I think, 70% of the people thought he won. And the people, I mean, everybody else, the rest of the pack was so far behind. I mean, he beat everybody. He trounced them. I mean, it wasn't even close based on these polls. I mean, the second place guy was, you know, less than half, and then the rest of the pack was, I mean, you know, single digits. I mean, it was, you know, the equivalent of a, you know, 100-to-1 shot, you know, winning the Kentucky Derby, right? And the media should love this. It's a great story. Who is this guy, the Cinderella? You know, no one's heard of him. Why did he win the debate? What did he say? What did he say that was so appealing? But you know what? Nothing. Nobody talks about it. You know, I made it a point to watch a lot of the Sunday morning talk shows looking for someone to talk about Ron Paul. The only mention I saw was on the McLaughlin group in his when McLaughlin said, who do you think did the best? And all the people mentioned somebody other than Ron Paul. And at the end, he said he thought the best was Ron Paul and then went on to another subject, so no one got to talk about it. But very little talk. I didn't read any articles in major newspapers talking about, you know, Ron Paul, what he said, and the fact that, you know, I mean, in fact, a lot of articles, you know, on the internet that I read, you know, about who won the debate, winner of the Republican debate, all the discussions about who won talked about, you know, Mitt Romney, did he win, or did Giuliani, or McCain, you know, but they ignored the person who did win based on the polls that were taken on the internet. Because what else are they going to base it on, right? You base who won the debate based on what the people, who do the people find? It's not really a debate, but it's like an opportunity to say your stuff and to see how many voters you influence that are going to want to support you, right? So according to these polls, the potential voters who were watching on the internet preferred Ron Paul. They were impressed with what he said. Where is the media coverage of this? You know, if this was a Democratic debate and the winner was a socialist, real far left winger that no one ever heard of, and he did as well in the polls, you better believe he'd be all over the media. And, you know, probably if even in the Republican, if he wasn't a Ron Paul with this libertarian, you know, abolish the income tax, let's have sound money, if he was a more of a centrist George Bush type guy who won, I bet he would have been all over the talk shows and all over the newspaper. But because this guy is so anti the establishment in, you know, sound money, talking about the Constitution, they're ignoring him. They're completely ignoring him. I mean, if somebody is looking for evidence of media bias, here it is. You know, why wasn't there more coverage of this event? This is the type of story that the media should eat up. Right? Out of nowhere, this guy wins a debate. Who is he? Let's hear about him. Let's show him. Now, my guess is that when Fox runs their debates at Atlanta, I think, coming up, I bet they don't even have a poll, an internet poll. I don't think they even want to take one because they're afraid that Paul will win that one. So I don't even think they want to give him a sounding board. So I think now that they did these polls, and I think one of my clients told me he heard somebody commenting somewhere on something about the internet polls, and they said, well, you know, those are just a bunch of crackpots. A news reporter, saying, well, you know, yeah, those polls don't mean anything because this is a bunch of crackpots voting. Can you imagine that? I mean, you're supposed to be an unbiased reporter, and you don't like the poll because you say, well, it's rigged, it's the crackpots, you know, are voting. You know, like, I guess the people that were voting for Sanjaya, you know, on American Idol, decided they were going to screw with the polls and vote for Ron Paul. Like, you know, I mean, it's all nonsense. They don't want to try to admit that maybe his message of, you know, smaller government, less taxes, sound money is resonating with somebody. You know, they don't want to admit that. But anyway, and if you don't know who Ron Paul is, I mean, he's a good guy. He's been around for a long time. You know, he's been in Congress. He used to be a doctor. He's a medical doctor. You know, he's an obstetrician, delivered thousands of babies. But he's a libertarian. He's also pro-life, and he makes a good libertarian argument for pro-life. So he's a natural. I mean, he's the only real conservative. I mean, the Republican Party should be all over this guy. It'd be something to see him, you know, get more support. But I mean, he's the only real, you know, Ronald Reagan, Barry Goldwater type guy in the field of 10. He should get the nomination, but obviously he won't. But you know, if the media covered him, you know, and who knows where he might be? You know, who knows? Anyway, we've got Larry calling in from Des Moines, Iowa. Go ahead, Larry.
You know what I get a kick out of, Peter? When you're talking about this Warren Buffett guy, you know, everybody goes to him now for advice on politics and everything. He just came out with a statement today, who he supports for president? Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. The funny thing is you can't support both of them because they're the contenders against each other. What is up with this jackass?
Well, remember, his father is the guy. He's a big proponent of, you know, a big inheritance tax, a state tax. Look, you know, there are a lot of very smart people who make very foolish choices when it comes to politics. Now, obviously, Warren Buffett is an intelligent guy. He's a good investor. He's smart enough to know to invest money offshore. Maybe that's why he wants Hillary or Block, because he knows it'll be bad for the dollar and it'll help out all the foreign investments he's been making. I don't know. But, I mean, I have a feeling that it's not, he doesn't have a nefarious motive. I have a feeling that, you know, like a lot of other smart people, he just doesn't understand economics. You know,
yeah, but I mean, how can you say he doesn't understand? He's the greatest genius in the world.
It doesn't matter. Look, Albert Einstein was a socialist. You know, so you can be a very smart guy. I mean, I'm not, obviously Albert Einstein was a genius. I mean, far above, you know, my level of intelligence. I couldn't even comprehend. I can't even make sense out of the things that he could think about. His mind was able to do things that, you know, I mean, I'm like a chimp next to Einstein. Yet, he was a socialist. He didn't understand economics. I mean, it just wasn't, you know, he was thinking with his heart. He never really spent the time to think about and analyze, you know, what his heart was telling him. And I think, you know, and sometimes a lot of very wealthy people, like Warren Buffett, feel guilty about their wealth, and they don't want to seem mean-spirited, and they want people to like them. And the way to have people like you is to be a liberal, to be a Democrat. Because that people.
Do you think about shorting Berkshire Hathaway?
Let me finish my point. In people's minds, you know, when you say you're a Democrat and a liberal, it makes them think you care about people, because the liberals, you know, have that mantle. They're associated with caring and compassion, even though they're not. Even though, you know, all their best laid plans end up hurting the very people who they champion the most. But again, if you're trying to appeal to the masses and show them that you care, it's easy to say, yes, I care, see, I vote Democratic, then say, I'm a conservative, I'm a Republican, and I care, and then have to explain why their policies, you know, yes, I'm against the minimum wage law because it destroys jobs. It's easier to say, yes, I think people should have higher wages because, you know, that's what appeals to people. But I would not short Berkshire Hathaway stock. I mean, if you want to short stocks, there's stocks that are going to do a lot worse than Berkshire Hathaway. But I also don't think it's a great buy right now, because even though Warren Buffett is buying a lot of foreign stocks, relative to all the U.S. stocks he already owns, it's a small percentage. And so people would be better off doing what Warren Buffett is doing, but with their own money. And that's what we're doing at Euro Pacific Capital. We're buying the kinds of stocks that Warren Buffett is buying now, and many kinds of stocks that he would love to buy, but he can't because he's too big. He can't buy some of these smaller cap stocks. But we're doing what he's doing with new money. So you want to use...
When you say that he can't buy small cap stocks, that's ridiculous.
Well, he can't. He buys companies. He's not going to go buy a company with $100 million or $200 million market cap. I mean, it's ridiculous.
But when you say he can't do it, but you can, that's ridiculous. Of course he can do it.
No, he can't, because it doesn't make sense for his strategy. He's managing, you know, such a huge pool of money that he has to find, you know, major, major companies that he can buy the whole thing. I mean, if he find, let's say he finds a small stock that's worth $200 million and he thinks it could double. Big deal. Even if he buys it, it's meaningless to his returns. So he doesn't even look.
If he thought it would,
things are under his radar,
yeah,
that we're able to look at.
If he thought it would double, he would buy it. I guarantee you.
No, he wouldn't. Not if it was so small. And then if he couldn't even buy enough of it. Let's say a company is worth $200 million. I mean, what is he going to buy? 5% of it? You know, if he buys too much, he'll push it up. What, 5% of it? You know, he doesn't even think in these numbers. It's a different universe that he's operating in. But I think it gives, you know, it puts him at a disadvantage in many respects. But the fact that he's still able to do good returns, I mean, he's a good investor. But it doesn't mean...
I'll tell you something. Anybody who says, I support for president the two contenders against each other for the Democratic Party, I mean...
But obviously, anybody
will tell you, that, I mean, that's the most baloney
right, anyways,
heard in my life.
Steve, thanks for the call. We're running out of time. Thanks for the call. Yeah, we've only got about 5 minutes left, but just one last thing, in that I obviously Buffett knows that these two are running against each other. I think his whole point was he would support either one, either Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama. Basically, he's saying, look, I'm a Democrat, and I'm going to support whoever the Democrats nominate, and he likes both of the contenders on the Democratic side. And, you know, as I said, I can't fault Warren Buffett for that. I mean, there's a lot of people who are very smart, who are Democrats. I mean, look, you know, I mean, it's no secret. I mean, I'm Jewish, And, you know, the Jews vote Democratic. I mean, I'm in a big minority in the Jewish community. There is a growing number of Jewish Republicans and conservatives, but we're still way in the minority. And it's not that, you know, these other Jews are stupid. I mean, many of them are very intelligent people. They're doctors, you know, lawyers. A lot of them work on Wall Street. Yet they're still Jewish. I mean, they're still liberal. They're still, you know, why? I mean, is it guilt? I mean, is it, again, there's a whole, I mean, there's a whole many, many reasons, I think, why people are liberal or Democrats. And a lot of people grow out of that. I mean, a lot of it is when you're young. I mean, a lot of people start out. I mean, it's the old thing is if you're not a socialist or Democrat by the time, you know, you're 18, you don't have a heart. But if you're not a Republican or conservative by the time you're 28, you don't have a head. So, I mean, usually this is something a lot of people grow out of. But, you know, some people don't. But anyway, you know, we're running out of time here. We got about three, four minutes left, so no more time for calls. But I was hoping somebody would have called in about these debates. But we'll see what happens, you know, for the Republican debates that Fox is covering. You know, interestingly enough, initially Fox was only going to have the top three or four candidates in the race, and they weren't even going to have the dark horse candidates. So Ron Paul wasn't even going to be there. But they changed their mind, and now all 10 of these guys are going to be in the Fox debate. Oh, I didn't realize we have one more guy hanging on, so let me grab this call from California. Steve, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, and I was just going to add to that. I saw something on the net that showed the amount of time allocated, speaking time allocated to each of the contenders there, and McCain had like 12 minutes. Ron Paul was the bottom three at 4 minutes. So he won the debate with only 4 minutes of exposure.
That's amazing. Imagine if he had more time. It's like a boxing match, and they tied both his hands behind his back, and he still won.
Right, and then they ignore him anyway. So it's fascinating. And my last comment is, how can Warren Buffett afford to be a Democrat? Or maybe he's the only one that can afford to be one.
Well, that's it. When you're really rich, you can, because it doesn't matter how many taxes he pays, he's still a billionaire. You know, I mean, so a lot of these super rich people, you know, they call limousine liberals. You know, it's very easy. You know, and the thing is, though, a lot of these very rich people, and I've talked to some. I have a couple more clients, so I needle them about it. But yeah, they're very liberal and everything. But when it comes to their own taxes, they're in every tax shelter, doing everything they can to pay as little taxes as possible, while they're trying to force higher taxes on everybody else.
Hello, John Edwards. Well, listen, have a good week, Peter.
Thanks for the call, Steve. Yeah, there's nothing like hypocrisy, but I mean, that's what politics is all about. Anyway, thank everybody for listening. Next week, I will be doing the show, hopefully, from Las Vegas. But if I end up not doing it, it'll be because I'm tied up. I don't have my schedule, so maybe Eric Steingrubner will be doing it. I know John Catalfia will also be in Vegas, so somebody will do the show next week, potentially me. But then I will be back the following week. Anyway, thanks everybody for listening. Again, www.europax.net. Make sure and order a copy of my book, Crash Proof, if you haven't bought it. Call those talk shows. We've got to get this book reviewed. I've got to get people talking about it. You know, and visit my website, sign up for the newsletters, read the special reports. The number to call, toll-free, the main number, 800-727-7922. If you haven't set up an account yet, do it. Do it before the dollar collapses. We are running out of time. And again, we're running out of time for the show. So thanks, everybody, for listening. And tune in again 1 week from today, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. So long, folks. See y'all in Vegas.